now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to consider the ability of one individual to change the course of history. We're doing a special broadcast today about one of our greatest presidents, the 40th president of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan. A special show called What's So Great About President Reagan. And no, that's not the music from Star Wars, as we mentioned to you. It's actually great, great film music that apparently President Reagan was very proud of, because it's the music from his famous, most critically acclaimed movie, a movie called King's Row, the music by Eric Wolfgang Korngold. And apparently President Reagan wasn't that into music. How do I know? Because I'm sitting here with his son, Ron Reagan, my colleague on talk radio and the fourth of the Reagan children. Ron, thanks so much for doing this.
You bet. And it's nice to know that composers plagiarize as well as writers.
Oh, absolutely.
Think John Williams ever heard that?
No question about it. And that's not the only place he took music from Korngold, but that's another story. Your dad was not a big music fan?
He wasn't really terribly musical. And as the years wore on and his hearing got worse and worse, I used to laugh sometimes because I'd see him at some event where music was playing and people were meant to be clapping along, and almost inevitably he was off the beat.
I see. It's a real privilege to speak with Ron Reagan about your father. You were 8 years old when your father basically left the world of Hollywood. A lot of people would say he left the world of Hollywood before, because he was so interested in politics, and ran for governor of California. You grew up with your father's political career. And would it be fair to say that today, you would not describe yourself as a Reagan Republican?
No, that's fair enough. As you know, I'm more on the left side of the spectrum.
Right. And that was something that you must have had opportunities to talk about with your dad.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we'd get into discussions and arguments at the dinner table and other places all the time, out on horseback rides, wherever, because we both liked a good argument. And he never, as a father, he was not somebody who would browbeat his children into silence. He welcomed your opinion, and he welcomed the argument. Of course, he thought he was right, and he thought he could convince you of his point of view, but he saw a differing opinion as a challenge.
Can you recall any time when he did convince you of his point of view?
Boy, that's a good question. We didn't disagree about everything. I thought, for instance, when he spoke of the Soviet Union as an evil empire, I don't know that I would have chosen the word evil necessarily. Totalitarian, autocratic, dysfunctional, oppressive. There are a lot of other words you could have used besides evil. But I thought that he was right to put it in their face, as it were, and identify the dysfunction that was the Soviet empire.
He was surrounded, obviously, in the White House and in the governor's mansion before that, with people who were in awe of him to some extent, with people who probably wouldn't have offered him too many spirited arguments about policy. Would both you and Patty, your older sister, have been more forward than people on the staff about arguing with your dad?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Because we were not in awe of him. He was an impressive guy and very charismatic, of course, even as a dad at home. But you can't live with somebody your entire life and be in awe of them all the time. And as I said, he never gave you the impression that your opinions weren't welcome, and that just because you disagreed with them, you ought to, shut up and go to your room.
Was there any time when it came close to that where the disagreement about politics would be so bitter that you felt that there was strain on your relationship?
Not on mine personally. I know that, and I don't want to speak for her, but with my sister Patty, it happened a little more. She was a little older, of course, she's 6 years older than me, during the Vietnam War. And so that became a much more heated argument at the time for her. Also, nuclear disarmament became an issue for her in the early 80s. And they would argue pretty vehemently about that sort of thing. But he was not the sort of person to freeze you out.
That's part of the reputation of your dad. And I wanted to ask you about that specifically. Is there are all these stories about your father, President Reagan, and Tip O'Neill, the then Democratic Speaker of the House, that they would go at each other. I mean, President Reagan had a Republican Senate for 6 out of his 8 years, but a very Democratic House, and that they would go at it. But then there's two Irish guys, they liked each other and they would relax together. Is that your recollection?
Oh, it is. Absolutely. He never took it. My father never took these disagreements personally, either with his children or family members or with somebody like Tip O'Neill. And yeah, they'd go at it hammer and tong. But at the end of the day, they could go have a beer, so to speak.
When you say so to speak,
I don't know that they actually went to a pub and had a beer together.
Well, I think Tip O'Neill had a famous cabinet in his office, the Speaker's office, that was well-stocked.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not sure if they ever imbibed there together. But figuratively speaking, yes, the assumption on my father's part was that they all wanted the best for the country. And just because Tip O'Neill disagreed with him about things didn't mean that Tip O'Neill was a bad American or a bad person. They just had a disagreement. And at the end of the day, fine. Okay. We can still be friends. And we're both Americans. We're both human beings. And
was there anybody with whom, because I know your father, I was reading some of this material, he struck up a very warm, cordial relationship with Gorbachev.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved that. There's a photograph of Gorbachev at the ranch where he has his cowboy hat on backwards, which your father teased him about a great deal, because Gorbachev wearing the cowboy hat backwards is pretty funny looking. But can you think of anyone where they had just crossed your father in such a way where he couldn't find a moment of warmth or companionship or geniality?
Well, of course, there are people on the planet who are just terrible, awful dictators and who, you know, you don't want to like them.
Let's say other Americans.
Out of that realm, no, not really. Not that I'm aware of. He was not a man to lose his temper. Although I've seen him get angry, but he was not a yeller or a screamer. He was not a man to bully people or berate them, or particularly if they worked for him, if they were below him on the food chain, so to speak. He considered that sort of behavior to be bullying, and he thought bullies were cowards. And so he simply didn't behave that way. He never struck any of his children.
Never, ever.
Never, ever.
Wow.
Did not yell at us. His way of dealing with problems where you'd done something wrong or whatever when you were a kid was to sit you down and have a talk about it and make you feel really bad about what you'd done so that you'd be itching to go apologize to whoever you'd offended.
You never knew your grandfather. Your grandfather died.
On my father's side.
On your father's side. Yeah. Loyal Davis, your mother's stepfather. You would know.
Yes.
But your grandfather, Jack Reagan, according to your father's own memoirs, his own recollections, your grandfather was a drinking man.
Yes, he was, at times. Not constantly, but ironically, perhaps, my father used to say it wasn't when times were bad that he would drink. It was when things were going well that he would fall off the wagon and he would go and he'd tie one on and he'd, you know, end up passed out on the front doorstep in the snow. And my father famously at age 10 or 11, you know, drug him in once in the early morning hours, finding him passed out there in full view of the neighborhood, of course, on their front doorstep, and it gnawed at my father. He didn't like that at all.
He was fairly straightforward about talking about your grandfather as an alcoholic. Did your dad, was he particularly concerned in terms of teaching you about alcohol? Was there, because I know that many people who grow up, adult children of alcoholics, become very concerned, very sensitive to that issue. Was that a big issue in your upbringing?
No, not particularly. I mean, you know, you go through the usual teenage stuff where you're kind of experimenting with alcohol and that. But no, and he wasn't a teetotaler himself by any means. He considered alcoholism to be a disease of sorts. And he recognized that there are some people who simply can't stop drinking. The problem is it's not the one drink. It's just that every drink that follows thereafter, that there's no stopping. And he didn't have that problem. He used to enjoy a cocktail before dinner and a glass of wine with dinner, but that was about it.
We're speaking with Ron Reagan about his father, the 40th president of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan, part of a special broadcast. What was so great about President Reagan? We'll continue exploring that with his youngest child, his son, Ron Reagan. coming up on the Michael Medved Show. Minutes after the hour on the Michael Medved Show, special edition of the Michael Medved Show. Music in the background from the favorite movie of a pretty frequently underrated actor named Reagan, Ronald Reagan. We're speaking to somebody else named Reagan, Ron Reagan, the president's son. In this special broadcast, what was so great about President Reagan? Ron, your whole life, You've been living with people who feel close to your father, including people who never met him. Mm-hmm. He's your father. People mm-hmm. who claim to be representing his values, his ideals, to be in some sense keepers of the Reagan flame. If you were to try to isolate what it is about your dad that is most frequently gotten wrong, what would it be? What do people get wrong about him?
Well, first of all, I should say that I don't hold myself out to be an authority on the careers of Ronald Reagan. I'm his son. I never covered him as a journalist. I didn't commentate on him while I was there. I can tell you that somebody gave me, just as a little prequel, when I was a teenager, somebody gave me a campaign-style button once that had his picture on it, and it said, "Ronald Reagan is definitely not a lesbian." So if there's anybody else out there that thinks that that might be the case, I can explode that myth right now. Ronald Reagan was not a lesbian.
This was a campaign button at the time?
It was just a humorous button.
Okay,
got
it.
It wasn't an actual mass-produced button.
Okay, good.
But I think there's a couple of things I think that most people get wrong. One is that that he was an intellectual lightweight. He was actually a very bright guy. But he was not bright in the way that most people in Washington tend to be bright, and was not the kind of smart that they tend to value. He was not a policy wonk. Somebody, I can't remember if it was Michael Deaver or Stu Spencer, one of his campaign managers, once said that you could fly across the country with Richard Nixon, and he could look down as you're flying over various states and areas, and he could tell you the precinct chairman and every locality, every precinct in the country. He knew the Republican Party inside and out, nuts to bolts.
Bill Clinton was like that, too.
Bill Clinton, very
Same
much
thing,
like that.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan, not like that. That was not his. He could have cared less who the precinct chairman was in these various places. He didn't have that kind of smarts. His smarts was much more people-oriented. It was much more vision-oriented. There were a few big things he wanted to accomplish, and he thought about those deeply and for a long time. And that didn't always translate for people in Washington, people in who are journalists, people are other politicians and political pros who like that kind of horse racy, wonky kind of smart. That's the kind of smart they value. And that just wasn't him.
Peggy Noonan, who worked for your dad as a speechwriter and wrote an interesting book about him called When Character Was King, says the one thing that people, and this goes along the lines of what you're saying, Ron, that what people got wrong about President Reagan is they didn't understand that he wasn't just an actor, that he was an artist. Most people don't know what a talented cartoonist he was.
Yeah, he drew very well. He used to draw me pictures all the time when I was a kid. Draw them on cardboard and then cut them out, and I'd go play with them.
Now, a lot of those pictures in the Reagan Library today, or did it just got thrown away in the nature of things?
Oh, a lot of those would have just been thrown away. I was just a kid, and this was just something my dad was doing on a Saturday afternoon to keep me amused.
But apparently, when he was very young, he dreamt of being a cartoonist at some time, and he surely had talent that way. His writing, some of the writing that I've come across in preparing this, when he would write stories when he was at Eureka College, and immediately afterward. And he enjoyed reading fiction. Would that be correct?
Oh, he did. He was, both my parents were big readers. They always had stacks of books on the bedside table. Yeah, he was a very good writer, a very good editor of other people's writing, too. Earlier in his career, before he was in politics, and in the early years as governor also, he used to write a lot of his own speeches and would do so very well. Most of his, or many of his really good early speeches, the one he did for Barry Goldwater, for instance, which really launched his political career, he just sat down and wrote that himself. There was nobody
else. That's all him.
Oh, that's all him. Yeah. I used to watch him at home. He had the little note cards that he would write, and he wrote in a kind of a shorthand code for himself. Just in pen on these little, 3x5 or whatever it is, note cards. And he'd sit there, in the den while I was, say, watching a football game on a Sunday or whatever it was. And sotto voce, he would be going through the script or the speeches, just kind of under his breath, just, talking like this, giving the speech just to get the rhythm and making changes and all. And he was very good at editing people's speeches. Later, when obviously when you're president, you can't be writing all the speeches you give. There's just not enough time in the day. But he was very good at working with the speechwriters and making their work better.
He also had quite a fascination with an interest in American history. Would that be correct?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's true.
When you were younger, would he take you when you came to Washington? And I would imagine that you had visited Washington with your father before he was president.
Nope, I don't think I ever did.
No kidding.
No, I don't think I'd. I don't recall ever going to Washington, D.C. before he was president, actually.
Wow. Yeah. So the first time you would become familiar with Washington, your parents were based in the White House.
That's right. That's a nice way to get introduced to it.
What was the best part of having parents living in the White House and the worst part?
Well, the worst part would have to be things like, the assassination attempt. I mean, when you see your father being gunned down on the street over and over again in this endless video loop, there's no question that's the worst part. The best part is simply being in a position to at least occasionally be behind the scenes, close to the really ultimate source of power on the planet, and see how things work and look at the personalities, the various personalities involved. And in my case, to realize that, well, there's some very bright and accomplished and capable people that get involved in government. They're just people, they make mistakes. They're not geniuses. These are not towering figures necessarily. They're just folks trying to muddle through and do the best they can, and they make mistakes.
In terms of some of those towering figures, were there people in that Washington milieu that your father seemed to be particularly impressed with, or where he would look on them and say, Ron, this guy's really impressive, terrific guy?
My father never minded not being the smartest guy in the room. He famously said that, there's no end to what you can get accomplished if you don't mind who gets the credit. And he didn't mind if other people got the credit. He didn't always have to be the star. He was very fond of George Shultz, I know. That was somebody who he never actually singled somebody out and said, this is a person you should emulate or anything like that. But I know that he was fond of George Shultz and impressed by him.
What about Richard Nixon? Your father had a complicated attitude toward Richard Nixon.
Yes, somewhat. I think that politically they, saw eye to eye on a lot of things. But I think he recognized that Richard Nixon was a troubled individual in many ways. he wasn't really dad's kind of guy, if you know what I mean.
We'll get into what that means. I mean, Richard Nixon, not a sunny personality. Your father, famous for being a sunny personality. When we come back, I want to confront Ron Reagan with a yearbook inscription from his father's high school in downstate Illinois. That and more on this special broadcast with Ron Reagan. What's so great about President Reagan? After the hour on the Michael Medved Show, special edition of the Michael Medved Show, a special edition about the 40th President of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan, joined this hour by President Reagan's son, Ron Reagan, who is my colleague and my friend, who, by the way, I think illustrates one aspect of your father's life and approach to life, which is that it's possible to have political disagreement without being disagreeable.
Indeed, yeah.
Your father, when he graduated from high school in 1928, and one of the things about his life is when you read about his early life in downstate Illinois and a difficult background and moving around from town to town, he graduated from high school, and in his high school yearbook, it says Donald Reagan. They got his name wrong, Dutch, but apparently everybody called him Dutch as far as you can.
Pretty much, yeah. His father started that when he was a little child. He said he looked like a fat little Dutchman. He had that little kind of Dutch boy haircut when he was a little baby, and so they, yeah, called him Dutch.
So everybody got to put in his or her creed, and the Reagan creed was, life is just one grand sweet song, so start the music.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like the older Ronald Reagan, you
know? Yes and no. There is always that part to him. He was very optimistic. He was a sunny personality and pleasant to be with. I think later on in life, though, as you might expect, as with most people, he had suffered disappointments. He had gone through a divorce. There had been a physical injury where he shattered his leg playing a softball game in Hollywood, which I think had an effect on him. It happened close to the time that he was going through a divorce with Jane Wyman. He was disappointed in his career ultimately as an actor and felt betrayed to a certain extent by some of the people who were around him and involved in that. So I think that underneath the sunny optimism, there was also an element, a small element perhaps, maybe 10% of the whole, but an element of sadness as well.
How did that express itself? How did you as a son see that?
I think it expressed itself not overtly, but more in terms of a kind of a withdrawal at times, and a sense that around certain topics maybe, or just certain levels of his personality, that you weren't really going to be invited in. That there were, you think about his relationship with his father, you know, the guy who was drinking, the guy who maybe, you know, shamed them in front of the neighborhood by passing out in the front doorstep and that sort of thing. There was a kernel there of sadness. And it wasn't something that he wanted to show you particularly, but it was there.
You were, of course, you were basically grown up. You were almost 20 when your dad lost his presidential race in 1976 when he challenged mm-hmm. Gerald Ford and came heartbreakingly close. Is that something that he took particularly hard, his only real political defeat?
Not so much, no. I don't think that it devastated him. I think he was also conscious that at the Republican convention that year in 76, when he was invited by Gerald Ford to come down to the podium after the vote was in and Ford was nominated, and Ford waved him down from the skybox to come in. First, my father wouldn't go. He refused to go. This is his night. Let Ford have it. But Ford kept waving him down, and the crowd kept cheering and chanting for him. And so he did come down, and he made that speech about, you know, driving along the Pacific Coast Highway and wondering what future generations would think of his generation and whether they were able to forestall nuclear oblivion. And as he gave the speech, you could see people in the audience with tears in their eyes. And I think he realized, as they realized, that in a sense, the wrong guy had gotten the nomination. Now,
certainly for Republicans, that was true.
Yeah, although I have to say that had he run in 76, he probably would have lost. Just it wasn't a Republican moment in 76. Not, you know, in the wake of Nixon and Watergate and Vietnam and all that. And so it all turned out for the best, really.
As a son, your father had been around the track. He'd run for president. When it became clear, and it became clear fairly soon after that he was going to run for president again in 1980, as a son, did you welcome that, or did you say, oh, no, this is going to be more disruption and more public nature to our family? Was it the kind of thing you were excited about, torn about?
Torn might be a good way to put it. You are excited, and you want your, you know, this is your parent, this is your father. You want him to do what he wants to do. You want him to do what he feels strongly about. At the same time, you realize that there are risks involved, that this is a huge burden, the presidency, that it's going to change your family and the way they interact with the world forever.
And how did it change the Reagan family? We'll pursue that and more with Ron Reagan, part of the special broadcast, What Was So Great About President Reagan?
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
At the height of the Cold War, an ordinary and appallingly imperfect British businessman, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, is recruited for a dangerous mission by suave CIA agent Rachel Brosnahan in The Courier.
I'm just a salesman.
You're a civilian, so the KGB won't be watching.
It would be a real service to Great Britain.
What do you want me to do?
Well, what they want him to do is to risk his life to get secrets from a top-ranking Soviet bureaucrat, superbly played by Georgian actor Merab Ninidze, to avert a cataclysmic confrontation on the eve of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Closely based on an astonishing true story, The Courier is masterful in every detail. Those scenes of imprisonment and brutality ought to have earned it an R instead of the PG-13 rating. 4 stars for the completely compelling The Courier, one of the best films of 2021.
Let history say of us, these were golden years when the American Revolution was reborn, when freedom gained new life and America reached for her best.
Those the words, of course, of President Ronald Wilson Reagan, 40th President of the United States, whose memory we're honoring today with a special broadcast, What Was So Great About President Reagan. And it's my privilege to talk about that with one of the people who knew him best in a different way from many of the aides and associates, the way that only a son can know a father. Ron Reagan, my talk radio colleague. He is a daily talk show host and does a great job on our sister station here in Seattle. Ron, one of the things about your father is that he's identified as a conservative Republican, and so many people assume that conservative Republicans are automatically racist. But one of the things that comes across in all the material I've been reading about your father and your grandfather and your grandmother is that they were way, way ahead of their time in terms of enlightened racial attitudes. Do you think that's true?
I do think it's true. I know a story about my grandfather where he, and this was closer to the time that he passed away at a fairly early age. He was going to check into a hotel. He was a Catholic. And the proprietor of the hotel informed him when he checked in, aware that with the name Reagan, he was unlikely to be Jewish himself, informed him that we don't accept those kind of people in this hotel, meaning Jews. At which point, Jack Reagan turned on it, said to the guy, well, I assume then you don't want me here either, turned on his heel, went out and slept in his car that night. Now, the story goes on to say that he caught pneumonia and that eventually killed him. I'm not really sure about that point. But I do know, I've heard from a number of people, including my father, that story.
There's a story about your dad and the football team Eureka College.
That's
when
right.
He was traveling and two of the players were African American.
Mm-hmm. Not welcome at the hotel they were going to stay at. Now, they were traveling near his home in Dixon, Illinois at the time. And the coach came out of the hotel having discovered that two of these players were not going to be welcome there and started trying to kind of figure out a way to, you know, arrange lodging for the night. And my father, according to his recollection, pulled the coach aside and said, look, my family doesn't live far from here. Why don't you just say that there's a shortage of rooms in the hotel and, you know, so as not to embarrass anybody, I'll just say that we and these two black players can go and stay at my parents' house, and that they did.
And your grandparents would have thought nothing about your dad coming home with these two black guys.
No, not
in the
not
1920s,
at all.
Late
not
1920s.
At all. No.
This is the Michael Medved Show. This is the Michael Medved Show.
A special edition about the 40th President of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan. Joined this hour by President Reagan's son, Ron Reagan. The question about discussions of racial attitudes, racial issues. Your father was governor of California right after the Watts riots. The Watts riots are one of the things that helped to sink his predecessor, Pat Brown. Mm-hmm. And there were so many racial issues at the time. Did your father express himself on those issues as you were growing up? For instance, were you aware of Dr. Martin Luther King? You were 10 years old when Dr. King was mm-hmm. killed. But was that something that would have been talked about at home?
To some extent, I remember the issue of the Voting Rights Act. And my father did not support the Voting Rights Act. But he did so not because he wanted segregated schools and, you know, black people to be, you know, kept down. He, you know, it was a more sort of federalist issue for him.
Well, as he didn't it was for the, Goldwater.
Yeah, the federal government shouldn't be telling states what they should do about, you know, thus and such. But he was not he was not a bigot. That just wasn't part of his makeup.
You mention your father not being a bigot. One of the issues in which people have been fighting over the Reagan mantle, and one of the things about you, you don't claim to hold the Reagan mantle.
No, oh no.
You hold the Reagan name and you hold your family's history. But
sure.
Is the issue of immigration. Mm-hmm. Do you think your father would have supported some of those people who claim to speak in his name, who, for instance, believe that the 12 million Americans who are living here illegally right now need to all go home?
I don't think so. I don't make it a habit of speaking for my father. Didn't when he was alive. Don't now that he's dead. He was an intensely practical guy, too. You know, he wanted to discover what worked in a given situation. And clearly, shipping 12 million people south of the border is unworkable. And he would have realized that. He also had nothing against, actually was quite fond of, Mexican culture. He saw that as a big part of the California identity, for obvious reasons, and embraced it fully. Now, he would have thought that America had a right to defend her borders. We certainly shouldn't just, you know, throw the doors open. Anybody who wants to show up can. But he had no animus towards Mexican people. And, you know, while many of them don't admit it, you don't have to listen too hard to hear in the pronouncements of some people who are vehemently anti-immigration and for sending the 12 million back, that there's a cultural and racial aspect to this that would have made my father very uncomfortable, I believe.
In terms of mistakes, every politician, every leader, every human being makes mistakes. You ever know your father to feel regret or apologetic about some mistakes in his life or his leadership?
Well, I happened to be back in Washington while the Iran-Contra thing was all sort of coming to a head. And actually when he participated in writing the speech that he ultimately delivered to the country, where he admitted that, in fact, there had been an arms for hostages deal. And in fact, some of the money had gone to the Contras and all. I think it was hard for him to believe in that instance that there were people working for him, people around him who were doing things behind his back, who were doing things he wouldn't have approved of, and were running this sort of game on the side. And I think he regretted not policing that more effectively.
Hmm. So you're not one of those people who buys the idea that, well, President Reagan was secretly manipulating this whole thing behind the scenes?
No, he knew about the arms for hostages,
right,
if you will, although he didn't see it that way. He thought he was just negotiating with middlemen and, frankly, trying to save people's lives.
Of course.
But the other part, the Contra aspect, he didn't know anything about it.
We'll be right back with Ron Reagan a few moments more, talking about his father, the 40th President of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan, the special broadcast, What Was So Great About President Reagan?
You're listening to a Best of the Michael Medved Show. For complete show archives, go to michaelmedved.com and consider becoming a Medhead. Use the promo code SPRING40 for some special discounts. When you become a premium subscriber, you get access to hundreds of Michael's commentaries, movie reviews, exclusive podcasts, and of course, our commercial-free radio show going back years and years. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead banner today.
No. 55 minutes after the hour, and a very fast hour it's been, with Ron Reagan talking about some of the recollections and observations about his father, President Reagan. In terms of the end of your father's life, the long twilight, people have described it, he clearly followed the election of 1992 with some interest and passion when his vice president, George Herbert Walker Bush, lost to President Clinton. Mm-hmm. Would that have been the last election he followed with interest?
That would have been the last presidential election by 96. I don't believe, while he would have been aware that there was a presidential election, by that time he wouldn't have been following it.
The world was shrinking,
yes.
Closing in on
yes.
him. And in terms of the last stages of his life, was there one thing that he held on to more than others in terms of
his personality? Really stayed virtually to the end, and you could ask his nurses about that, who were there 24 hours a day the last couple of years at least. He just, a lot of Alzheimer's patients, through no fault of their own, we're talking about a brain disease here, can have fits of rage and paranoia and all sorts of things. There was almost none of that with him. He retained, even when he lost the ability to speak and to communicate, he still retained this. You could tell it was him in there somewhere, this sort of essential sweetness of personality that he had.
Speaking of that, in terms of your own career, what were his hopes for you?
I think he just wanted his children to be happy and to follow their own dreams and do whatever they wanted. He never,
He never wanted you to go into politics.
No, never meant it, and that's a good thing because I won't disappoint him.
I see, but he did radio, of course, early
yes, he
on
did.
In his career.
Yes, he did.
Do you think
very
he would get
radio.
A kick out of the fact that you're doing a daily radio show
yes,
talking about
I,
the issues?
I think he would, and he would have loved to talk to me about when he was doing radio and how he used to do this or that or the other thing. Yeah, he would have gotten a kick out of that.
Have you ever thought how cool it would be on your radio show, which I enjoy hearing it when I can, how cool it would have been to interview your dad?
Well, on almost every job in journalism or commentary, whatever I've had in the media, I've been asked at some time when he was still alive to somehow score an interview with your father, and I always refused. I wouldn't do that because it would be pointless. I mean, how do you either do a hatchet job on your own father or you do a powder puff thing with your own father, and neither one of those interested me. So.
Mm-hmm. In terms of advice that he would give you at this point in your career, what do you think he would say?
Well, he used to tell us when we were kids growing up that a gentleman always does the kind thing. And I think that that's something that always stays with me. And I think that he would have that same advice for me today.
Something beautiful to stay with all of us. In remembering one of the great Americans of the last century, or of any century, the 40th President of the United States, speaking with Ron Reagan, his son, in this special broadcast, What Was So Great About President Reagan.
Goodbye. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Now it's time for Medved's Entertainment Minute.
There's an ambitious new origin story about one of Disney's famous villainesses who's here treated more like a victim, particularly abused by a haughty fashion designer played by Emma Thompson, who nearly steals the show in Cruella, now streaming on Disney Plus and playing around the world in theaters.
You have the talent. Whether you have the killer instinct is the big question.
What was your name?
Cruella.
That's the other Emma, Oscar winner Emma Stone, who tries hard to bring her character to life but never succeeds. This film is a dark and demented disappointment, with few touches of humor, tenderness, or warmth, and the bizarre cartoonish depiction of the London world of high fashion in the 1970s is a pointless distraction with no payoff. Rated PG-13 for consistent references to pain, danger, and death, Cruella earns only 1.5 stars and would prove a cruel ordeal for both kids and their parents. This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. A new study of the aging process demolishes one of the chief leftist claims about healthcare, that government control can eliminate inequality. The research, conducted by Harvard and University College London, looked at more than 25,000 people over 50 in the U.S. and the U.K. In both countries, subjects with higher net worth enjoyed an identical advantage of 8 to 9 disability-free years compared to those with little or no personal wealth. The results shocked experts who expected that Britain's highly touted government-funded National Health Service would produce more equal outcomes than the United States. Data strongly suggests the real difference in health and longevity reflect common patterns in both countries, where the poor are far more likely to smoke, to consume unhealthy diets, to abuse drugs and alcohol, and shun regular exercise. In both America and Britain, health depends less on government programs than on lifestyle choices we can control. I'm Michael Medved.